Rabbeisai, we're holding here in Shaar Cheshbon HaNefesh, and we're still in the midst of the 12th meditation, 12th Cheshbon, and we're still pursuing the idea that the Chovas Levavos reminds us that our natural inclination is to spend more time worrying about the state of our body, our material well-being, than we spend on our spiritual well-being. She says, you know, look at the body. The body is really, wake up, he says, Hokits Ochi, wake up, my brother. Wake up. He says, you know, your body is a maverick. The body, you know, no matter what you do with your body, you're not going to be too happy, because the short time that you're with your body, zman kotzer zeh she'incha nimtza b'chavrosik, you're keeping your body company, it's keeping you company. The whole time you're with your body, lo posek mimenu tzar, there's always some kind of a pain. There's always a little back pain, an arm pain, a headache, sinus, this, that, just scratch yourself, that's the easy stuff. There's always a pain. There's always tzaras. You're hungry, you're thirsty, you're this, you're that. The body is a real nudik. You wouldn't want to marry your body. That's not a good shidduch. It's always bothering you. It's always aching, paining, bothering, krechting. If you eat too much, you get sick from eating too much. If you eat too little, you're weak, you're schwach, you're hungry. You never get it right. Either you stuff yourself, Sunday you stuff yourself, Shabbos you stuff yourself. Then you go to some chasna Sunday night, you bite, you stuff yourself, you shigger. You have three meals for one. Smorgasbord was 1.5 meals. The meal itself is 2 meals. When you're dancing in the middle of Meshugas, dancing on a full stomach, then you have to be in these tables, you go to sleep late at night. This body, you eat too much. The next day, you're busy at work. You don't get a chance to eat lunch till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you're schwach. And when you give it to dress, if you wear too much, you get hot. So in the winter, you don't like to put on those long underwear because you get hot later on. In the wind, the cold, it's good. You're happy you wore them. You get to the office. Oh, no, it's so hot over here. And then, if you wear too little, then you're freezing in the cold. It's impossible to wear those earmuffs, but your ears freeze. Some other shit, if you have the earmuffs, you feel like an idiot wearing stupid earmuffs. If you don't wear the earmuffs, your ears are going to freeze. So it doesn't go. You're too hot, you're too cold. That's what he says. He says, with the body, you never really can be happy. And that's in the good times. Then he says, you get sick with diseases, you don't even know what to do with them, you don't know where they come from, you don't know how to heal them. It's totally out of your ability. And yet, for this finicky, painful body, we're mice and nefesh. If you think about it, and so first of all, it's a very difficult master of the body. Secondly, he says, now we have to really think hard. What is the more important part of you? If at least the body and the soul were equal in their mila, in their value, in their significance, fine, maybe you should give the body as much time and attention as the soul. But neshama is far more precious. It comes from a world above on high. It comes from the Rabbanu Shlomo. After a few years of life upon death, neshama is going to go back to heaven. The body will molder in the grave, rotten. And the neshama is going to go to heaven. So what's more important? The neshama is nitzchis, it's eternal. The body is finite. Temporary, zmani. The neshama lasts forever. The body is going to go to waste. The neshama is built in merkavas. The neshama is not a synthetic. It is not a hybrid. It's not a crossbreed of numerous different components. It's not a compound. It's not merkavas. It's not a compound. So it's very pure. It's very real. The body is a slap together conglomeration, a potpourri of all kinds of different chemicals and minerals and waters and salts. And It's a big mess. It's a big mishmash. Murkav midvarim rabim. The neshama is adina. It's edel. The neshama is delicate, edel. It's edel. It's nice. The body is coarse, vulgar, magushim. It's magushim. It's mundane. The neshama understands, and the body has about as much seichel as a dumb animal. The neshama has the wisdom of the angels and above, and the body is about as dumb as a dumb horse or a dumb ox. The neshama has a tendency towards quality, towards good things, towards improvement of midos, and the guf, the body, has a proclivity for doing disgusting things, embarrassing things, things that are not appropriate. So if a person is going to make some small cheshbon, says the Chavos Levavos, where we should devote more time and effort to, we should certainly devote more time to our neshamas. And that's why Shlomo HaMelech and Mishlei Kasni says, Emes Kenei Val Timkor, get truth, don't sell it. Dei Chochma L'Nafshecha, get wisdom for your soul. Kinyanim Ruchliyim, a person should look for spiritual acquisitions, intellectual acquisitions. These things are B'Meshalcha, these things you really own. Material acquisitions you don't really own. They can be taken away very easily, you can lose them very easily, you can squander them. And as you get old, you start realizing that, you know, as you know, the Beis Halevi says it so beautifully in Parshas Bereishis, I believe it is. He says, how come? He says, you know, people are very funny. When they're young, they run after money to make parnasa. They have no care for their health. They don't care about their health. They work, they work a hook, they work and work and work. They travel, they run over the world, and they go here. And they don't give too much thought about their vitality. They don't give thought about their health. And they really ruin their health running around, working too hard. And then he says, the irony is when they get older, they spend all that money to regain their health. They spend all the money to get well again. So when they hit 50 and they suddenly have this problem, a heart problem, this problem, they spend the money for the health. The tarot is because as long as they were young, they didn't have the money yet. They thought the money is everything. They thought money is the panacea. They thought the money is the cure. If I only had money, everything would be great. If I only had money, it would be great. If I only had money, I could do everything with money. Wow. So they're running after the money. And when they finally get the money, they say, hey, it ain't so great. It's not what it's good out to be, this money. It's not so great. You know what? I'd rather have my health. It was a bad trade. I'd rather have my health. So they're willing to spend all that money now to get their health back. And as Pasha does, the health is worth more than the money. So why did we squander our health? Because we didn't know what money was first. We thought that money is better than health because it was outside of us. And the grass always green on the other side. That's just a little glimpse of taka. Why we're willing when we're young to squander on the shamas on our money. So a guy will have no problem to run out of shul 10 minutes early before davening's over. It's even one kaddish. Leave shul 2 minutes early because I have to run to a meeting or run to a bus or one, whatever. So I'm willing to squander my beautiful davening or squander even a little bit of my shir. We're not even going to the shir. We're not even davening with tibur. So I can make some money. Then when you finally come to the future, we'll realize that was a very bad exchange. It was not worth it. The neshama and its acquisitions and the neshama's enhancement and embellishment is far more precious than any financial enhancements. So, therefore he says, why bother so much with your body? Don't do it. He says, don't sacrifice your neshama for the sake of your body. It's not worth it. And the more you understand this, the more Hashem will punish you in the future for being so stupid as to squander your soul opportunities for your body. So be careful. So Rabbi Yisai, this is a very proper introduction. This is the end of the 12th meditation. It's such a good introduction to the real subject at hand today. And that is a brief memorial service in memory of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, whose yahrzeit is today. The last century, he died 1883, Chafei Shvat. And Yisrael Salanter taught Jews what it means to be more careful with your neshama than your body. He taught them many things. But I think one of the nicest stories is the story where he was giving a shir once to a few talmidim, and he started to cry. And after the shiur, the Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, why are you crying? So he said, the reason is because a rich man walked in during the shiur, and I was embarrassed, because I realized that the hem of my frock was ripped. I was embarrassed the rich man should see me with a ripped frock. Then I realized how stupid I was. Blessed love, I'll come before the Rabbanu Shalom, and my neshama will be so shredded with averus and so frayed, and so many, there'll be so many rips, not in the hems, but in the fabric, and the buttons of my spiritual frock will be ripped to pieces, and I'll come before the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what I should be worried about. I'm worried about what some silly boss of a dumb, some rich boor thinks of me. That's bothering me. I should worry about the status of my nebuch neshama, which is so ripped to shreds in so many ways. Come us love, from all sides, my neshama is so calloused and so abused. I'm so abused that alakai neshama shnasav to be tahiri. Neshama was once tahira, was once pure, it was perfect. I'll give it back to the bunch at the end of the lease. After my 70-year lease, my neshama is dented, it's ripped, it's dirty, it's 70 years, what we did to our neshama, 80 years into the neshama, it is a chavmamish geferlich, always the demushal with the car lease. After 3 years, you know what your car looks like, filthy, dirty car, you know, bumps and dents, you're so scared to scratch, what's going to be, give after 3 years, you know, they're going to charge you extra for all the bumps and dents and scratches. Imagine if you your car back after 80 years, what's it going to look like? Imagine give you a car back after 80 years, what the car is going to look like. Our neshama looks far worse. That's what I should be worried about, says Yerushal Salanta. Yerushal Salanta understood that the main thing is Tikkun HaNefesh, his famous mashal, where he once, one night, was passing by a shoemaker shop, and he was in spoil from the shoemaker. He's still up late at night, and he called out to the shoemaker through the window. He said, why are you still up? It's late. The shoemaker said, as long as the candle is burning, we can still fix some more shoes. So I said, oh, Yvesh, how much of a lesson a yid should take from that? As long as the candle of life is still burning, as long as the candle of the neshama is still burning, we can still fix up our neshama. So it's never too late. On the one hand, our neshamas are in not great shape. We've abused our neshamas badly. And the neshamas are ikir. And the neshama is really controlling our life. Yerushal Salanta was very much, very, I believe, is very, I believe that, I think the right way to look at it is that Yerushal Salanta was the forerunner of modern psychology. So, you know, there's nothing that's really new in the world. Ain kol kol shtach zeh shemesh. Gutenberg invented the printing press. He didn't invent the printing press. It was a printing press before Gutenberg. But the original printing press was just a block of wood, and it was very tedious and painstaking to carve into a block of wood. And you could use this block one time, you printed something, it was finished. It was put for a handbill maybe, for a sign. You couldn't print a book, because it's going to go to make 200 plates like that. It was a fortune. So the chiddush of Gutenberg was that Gutenberg made accessible printing. He invented the idea of molten letter typeset that you can make a special little printing from every letter, and then when you print one page you can take those very same letters and reorganize them and print another page. You don't have to recreate a whole new board which has no use later on. And he also invented the idea of a press, with he used the idea of a wine press, he applied it to a printing press. So Johann Gutenberg gets the credit for being the man who invented printing, which is such a revolution, more revolutionary than the PC, and the printing is unbelievable what it did for Jewish people, for sure. So, same thing, Freud popularized and systemized a lot about psychology, and his whole life he was working on them and changing them. But the idea that, what's the main chiddush of psychology? The main chiddush of psychology is that our subconscious has a more profound impact on us than our conscious. I don't think people appreciate that. That what's going on inside of us, in our subconscious, propels us and determines our decisions in life, what we're doing and where we're going, much more than our conscious. So unconsciously we think that, oh, I'm making a decision right now. We think, should I go here or not? Should I attend this dinner or not? We think I'm making a conscious decision based on rational, conscious ideas, how much time I have, and is it worth it, the effort. But the truth is, it's a subconscious thing that's going to, in the end, decide what we do that night. Because consciously, I might say to myself, that's not worth it to go schlep over there. But subconsciously, there's something that tells me, but I'm going to get some cover to go over there. That's the place to be tonight. That's the chosh of a dinner to be tonight. That's the chas to be at. I really wouldn't go there, but subconsciously, I have another agenda and I have other priorities and other values that are going to impel me to go. You know, consciously, I thought I'm making a decision based on conscious, rational data. That's the chiddush of psychology. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who really is a generation before this, because in 1883 when he was nifter, Freud was just starting. Freud died in 1940 or so. He died during the war. And so, you know, Freud's wife, her grandfather was Chacham Bernays, it's Philip Ployan. It was so totally secular religious. Her grandfather was the Rebbe of Shimshon Hirsch. Shimshon Hirsch's Rebbe in Hamburg, Chacham Isaac Bernays, was the grandfather of Mrs. Freud, of Sigmund, better known as, to us as Selig, Zelig Freud. But the Jews were so assimilated in Vienna, they didn't have a clue, didn't know too much about the Judaism until Hitler reminded them. He had to flee. Hitler, I believe he died in London. So, Rabbi Saul Salanter in Or Yisrael here, which was put together by Talmud Bissel Petterberger, speaks about the importance of learning Musar. And his Chiddush, which he constantly emphasized all over, I'm reading from Or Yisrael, essay number Vav. He says, a person who learns Musar, he says, you have to know that every, he says, you should know, by the Choypri HaNefesh, he himself says, by the Choypri HaNefesh, I mean, the concept is already mentioned, even the Chavos Vav is mentioned in some place. So the idea of a subconscious, the idea of what in German is called an Unterbewusstsein, under the Bavust, under what you're rationally constantly thinking about, this was known already from, I mean, it's not a Chiv, I mean, that the subconscious is ancient. But he speaks about the Choykrei Koychus Nafshus Adam, there's Koychus Meirim Berurim, or there's Koychus Keim. And then he puts in brackets in Yiddish, Klore und Dunkeler. There's Klore, Klore means clear mental thoughts, and Dunkeler, which are hazy, fuzzy. Koychus Keim are the, again, subconscious. You don't see them clearly in your conscious level, but they're the background, they're like in the shadows. The dunkler means in the shadows. There are the thoughts that are in the sun and the thoughts that are in the shadows. And he says clearly, Akeyim Hemayoiser Chazokim, the dunkler, the shadowy, the subconscious thoughts are stronger. Umaitsiyim Pulasim Besiris Ma'at Bechaizik Yod. The little bit, you just have to touch the button over there and they'll come out powerfully, b'chayzik yod. So, for instance, his example would be that a person's love for his own children. It's a subconscious thing. So the whole day, you can be a Rebbe in the, it's like my kids always said, you know, my kids always tell me, you know, when I was young, he said, you know, you love your balabatim so much, you know, what happened to us? Yes, they thought, because I spend more time with my Baal HaBat than them, because I'm learning Shurma. Sunday morning, I'm not learning with them. They're in school. I'm spending 2 hours with the Baal HaBat, maybe 5 hours with the Baal HaBat. Said, you love your Baal HaBat so much. But, like Rav Solzhenitsyn says elsewhere, you have to be a fire, Chas V'Shalom, and have a choice. I can only save one person, a child, or a person, one of the Baal HaBat. I might throw some of them into the fire in the first place. We love our Baal HaBat. So when the push comes to shove, your child is the one you really love, and it might be in the background over there, but when the right button comes up, danger, you have a choice only between the two. So when the Titanic is going on, there's only one place in the lifeboat, you take your child, not your great friend even, and your great buddy, and your great disciple, because you love your child more, it's there. So these are things that you don't think about even a lot. We don't even think about love of our children. That's Rabbi Yisrael's example. They're not near Gush all the time, but they really have a tremendous power of a person at the time when the button is pressed. So he says the only way to fight Taiva and Yetzirah, he says you cannot fight it with rational thinking. So I can speak to you day and night, and I can speak to myself. It's unbelievable. You can speak, I mean, the heart, We can speak that you can go to overweight, you can go to all, read all the books about eating and eating and eating, you shouldn't eat, it's not good for you, it's not healthy, and everything. And you, one smorgasbord, you're dead. One Viennese table, it's over, it's finished. One shalosh, one is pekel, it's over. That's the, you have to get it into your subconscious, he says. He says that only by learning Musar with the spilus, before you're tempted, and it's not just enough to read a book. He says you have to learn Taka b'spilus. Reading is not enough. That's why he held Musar, you have to learn Musar b'spilus, and constantly reiterates the idea that there has to be a base Musar. You're not going to learn b'spilus, you're not going to go to yeshiva, wherever it's learning Baba Kama, and sit down just there and start learning your Mesil Yashar. You gotta have a place which is private, only for Musar, where you can go anytime you feel like. When you feel the type is overwhelming, you need a little chizuk, you run in there, you learn for 15 minutes, he says, and you should do it. It's better to have little amounts spread out a few times, better to have 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, than can't learn for an hour. But you should reinforce it all the time. Better to have reinforcement at intervals than a one long stretch of learning the Musar. And slowly, slowly, as a whole program, how the Musar will get into your subconsciousness. And again, it's Lashon Taka is not so easy. The Lashon here is not so easy. And he says, also, in order to get to your subconscious, that might not impress you too much. But I think what is a little bit more impressive here is in Ois Zion, in Essay 7, he says, you know what really helps a Musar? Koyach HaTziur. Koyach HaTziur, that really makes a lot of sense. Koyach HaTziur is imagery. Imagery does get to your subconscious a lot. So, if you just say something to somebody, you know, it's not good to eat, don't be eating so much, it's not good for you, it's taiva, kinna, taiva, kovma, see, it's not good to eat, don't do it, don't give in, discipline yourself. I'm only appealing to your brain, to your rational brain. It makes a lot of sense. I'll give you proof positive that's not good for you, and then the American Medical Association has proven that it's dangerous and too much calories, it's not going to work. But if you have a tzir, if I give you a tzir, you know what, you're going to look like marbe. Basar marbe rima. Pirkei Avos comes along and says, he who increases his flesh increases worms in the grave. Now I'll sit for half an hour like the Kelmer Magid would give you a tzir, what it means to have the worms eating up your flesh, munching slowly, and the stench coming out of your grave as your body is rotting in the filth and the schmutz, and you're turning into filth and rotten mucus and ugh. It's horrible, and it stinks, and it smells, and your mama's you're a walking cesspool. The Kelmer Magid, mamash, when he would tell people what Gehenna is like, people would scream, ouch, ouch, it's fire! Mamash, in the middle of it, he could speak for an hour, giving a tziyah. And again, this is what Rav Gifter, and then Rav Gifter used to give us sometimes in the shir, how the Kelmer Magid would be Mitzayah Gehenna, that the real Pasha would say, ouch, it's burning. They would feel the heat. They would mamash feel the heat. It's a special gift to be able to have that power of imagery, that eloquence, to give over an illustration. That's really what Mishnah is all about. Again, great people have this ability. Great people penetrate our subconscious. It's so subtle sometimes that we don't even realize it. It's only later on, by looking back, we realize that person has hashpah on me because he addressed my subconscious rather than my conscious. That's why a great person also has hashpah just by his very being. Because if you look at a holy person, look at his tzura, somehow his, if you're zoicha, the tzura, it says, ach b'tzelem yishalach ish. Shav b'tzelem, your Rebbe in front of you, his tzura becomes embedded into your subconscious. When you see the picture, the living picture, that's even better than imagery. I see it in front of my face, that holy visage, and I see the holy person, mamash gets embedded into my subconscious. But this Rebbe Shaul says, tzur, imagery, pictures of a gavaltika koya, pictures of a gavaltika power. And this day and age where we are so attacked subliminally, Koyach HaTzir, and the Reb Dessler speaks about many, many places, about Tzir HaLev. It's one of the Yisoyos of Musar, Tzir HaLev. Tzir HaLev, a person has to have Mashavas. This is what the Chofetz Chaim did. The Chofetz Chaim, everyone knows, spent an hour or two every day. It's really amazing. So Emes Lamito, the Chofetz Chaim, would spend at least an hour a day alone in his attic, sometimes in the forest, and we know the stories how people overheard him sometimes speaking to himself. He spoke with Kol Rash Godel, the Chofetz Chaim with Mitzayat himself, how he was going up to the Beit Shamala, and how he was presenting his neshama to the Beit Nelach HaMisa, and how they asked him question after question, Yisrael Meir, were you careful with this, were you careful with that, I'll have to answer them, and they'll give him a Feher and Gan Shas, and they ask him, do you care about the people, and they take care of his family first, you worked with your family, what kind of house did you have? Did you get rid of that television set? Had you have a television set in your house? No excuses here. The rabbi, before he can give excuses and pull the wool over his eyes, you can fool him of being an erlich, a yid, baloney. But you corrupted your children with that television set, the videos, and all the stupid video games in the house. Oh, the computer games. Unbelievable, these computer games. I blow the kids' minds. So the same parent, oh, I send my kids to this great yeshiva, and I pay tuition for him, and I have a tutor for him, and I send the camp Munk in the summer, and this camp, and that camp, Hari Yisrael, Stei Chem, and the same father ruining his kid with a television set, ruining even those video games, the Meshuggah, the cup. I was in someone's house yesterday. My kids never had, we didn't have computers, my kids, we got enough of these things. Kid's showing me, I went to visit a sick kid, the kid's showing me, he's only 10 years old, wants to show me his computer games. And he's blowing up bridges and killing people and murdering and, that was only one game, but, and the variety of weapons he could use. Listen, I'll show the rub how many different weapons I have at my disposal. I can go with a dagger, with a hand grenade, with a mortar, with an AK-17, with a semi-automatic or automatic. I can do all kinds of stuff. He's Mamash King of the Mountain. He's blowing up the world. That's a calm game. That's just, that's just to get you into the mood, you know? Then there's now we have atom bomb games. I said, how can a cup so full with this stuff learn anything? How can the head, where's the room in the head of a little Torah, an Edelkite, need this? This goes right to the subconscious. This is imagery. It goes right to the subconscious, and you think about this all the time. And even the Rebbe is speaking, the kid's head is daydreaming away over there. Because how can you rid your mind of these vivid images that went right into your brain? So the kid's brain is someplace else. The Rebbe, every Rebbe, I deal with all different schools. I talk to them. The kids come to school, they're tired, they stay up too late playing the games, and their heads are fashed up with so much Nairish guy. These are the from kids with payas. Their heads are so stupid, filled with so much stupidities with these computer games or whatever stuff the other parents don't do and watch, that they're just not here. And the poor Rebbe has like deprogrammed them for an hour in the morning to try to get them down to earth. And forget about the sugar, they're eating everything, they're hyper. And then we expect to learn some of the kids. The kids learn very little. They learn very little. The Rebbe's have to, like every day, like squeeze out the last night out of them. And then start from scratch all over again. So Bishol Zanda says, this is the Koichas Kayim, these are the subconscious. This is what really controls us. And the only way to get rid of it is by Tziur Halev, by learning Musar, he says, with Spilus and with Sfasayim Dolkos. Of course, the second Chiddush of Bishol Zanda was putting great emphasis on Benon the Chabeira. And how much Benon L'Chaveiru is Mashpia Mad L'Makim. And maybe that's another real, actually, the Benon L'Chaveiru is another way into the subconsciousness, the sensitivity. Benon L'Chaveiru takes us away from ourselves. The main Koich HaTayv is that we are egocentric and that I'm everything. Everything is me. My self-gratification, I'm number one. Putting emphasis on Benon L'Chaveiru, like we saw Solanta with his extreme sensitivity, that is Ashpah Ben Lamakim as well. So, I mean, the examples are legion. But the simple story of B'Shol Slanter is such a partial example, it doesn't concern most of us anymore. Such an, but there would be an example. B'Shol Slanter, his Talmud invited him to his home for Shabbos. B'Shol Slanter didn't want to come. I'd rather eat in my room. The Rebbe, please, this is my biggest covet. No, I not really want to come. You sure you want me? He said, okay, well, if you want me, you have to be on my terms. What are your terms? My terms are, he said, but Rebbe, listen, I want to assure you that I have a beautiful Shabbos dish. We have Zivri Torah, we have Zemiris, it's beautiful, and the kids, and it's my Shabbos dish is superb. And people come over, and I give a shir, and it's wonderful. You'll have a Rebbe, I tell you, it'll be Melom Haba, it takes us 4 or 5 hours, the Shabbos dish, and it's something, it's really great. You'll be proud of me. So it sounds like, well, I only come on Manas that you make your Shabbos dish for 1 hour, and not a minute longer. But, you want me? 1 hour. Shul Zanda comes, kiddush, fish, soup, main course, kampot, benching, less than an hour. Shul Zanda says, please call on the cook. Cook comes in, an old almana. Shul says, please, I want to ask your forgiveness that I made you serve the food so quickly. I'm getting you to rush everything out of the kitchen. Says, you're asking me mechila? Adarava, a brach of thine cup. This is how we should have it every week. I'm tired, I have to stay here, I work the whole week, I work Friday especially hard, and then I'm kept here in the kitchen for 5 hours during the meal. I have to go and serve for 5 hours during this long stretched out meal. Gesundheit, great, 1 hour, I can go home and rest. So it's not to tell the Talmud, you see, your whole big hiddur Shabbos is on the chesh with this poor almana. You have to take her into consideration. So many, many times we're from on other people's cheshbon. They don't even think about it. But I guess the most exaggerated story of Yisrael's down to that, okay, we could, I think we can appreciate that. I think maybe we could maybe thought of that ourselves, that story. But the other story is something that Yisrael's son is davening in a shul on the side street of Vilna. And when it came to davening, so supposed to wash your hands before davening, so Slanter, Mamash just put a few drops on his fingertips. So his Talmud asked him, Rebbe, you know, I always see you wash b'shefa, like supposed to wash your hands. So Yisrael said, no, I can't do it. Why not? He says, in this shul, this is a shul which is on a side street. And there's a certain amount of members that come here davening every day. And this is before there was indoor plumbing. So the water carrier, the vasa tracker, brings the water, and he brings a mitzumtzumdik amount, a specific amount, just enough for the people who are davening over here. And if I'm a stranger, and if I use a full amount of water, so I might be able to use up the whole supply, by the time the last guy gets to shul, he won't have enough water. And what's he going to do? He's going to go complain to the president, there's not enough water. And the president complained to the vasa tracker and scream at the fellow. He'll get in the trouble. Why? Because of me. Because I was machmir to go ahead and pour water b'shefa of Yen's cheshbon. I can't do that. So we know these stories, but on the yards of Yisrael Salanta, it's good to think about them again. This sensitivity, that's why, you know, the sensitivity not to be marach and these silly Misha Beirachs for the whole world, go around looking around the whole shul to find another person you put on your list of Misha Beirachs at the expense of Tircha the Tzibura, you know. You know, it's just people have no, just go around, waste their time. Little thing, you know, a million different things when you make a simcha, tichli tzibur of simchas. I guarantee a huge olam haba. The person can figure out how he can do something at the picture taking and change them out. The reshivas, they have to do something. I tell them all the time, they're asin zadin. Why can't they get back the picture at the end of the chasana? Why, he's too sweated, the chasana, he's not going to look fancy enough, so go to the bathroom, comb his hair, comb his beard, Kala do her makeup. Klaus has to suffer an hour and a half every chasna, wasted an hour and a half. Hundreds of people, the tirch, the tzibur, the bittul Torah is unbelievable. No one cares. That's like you're talking to a wall. And only the reshivas can change this. Only they can say this, how it's got to be. It's like some reshivas will not go to a chasna if there's a video. They won't go. So the next step is, how can you be the tired of the whole chasna? And the food that's wasted. So I leave money many times. I know my meal is wasted. And I didn't get a meal talk. I'm hungry. But I can't stay around anywhere. Bittul Torah, bittul the whole thing. People have no time to stay. You're killing your own chasna. No, Baruch Hashem, my chasna. I know, I did. I had to wait. 45 minutes, if not less. I'd rather not do the whole thing at all. But that's the minhag. But it's got to be a concerted effort to have Rachmanis on Klal Yisrael. Actually, in the Schus of Yisrael Salanter, we should think about, number one, learning more Musar, number two, being more Zoyer, ben Adam LeChaveiro.